Now, we've been talking and referencing various health issues on the programme this morning. But what about a 4 million funding needed to cut waiting lists of children in need of surgery for scoliosis and spina bifida? Well, recently on the programme, and indeed they called in to see us, Lisa Brett from Honest to Revan, and her wonderful son, the boy wonder Eddie, called in to see us. We had a great, great day and a great, great chat. And Lisa joins us this morning. We're also joined by Amanda Reeves, who's from Clane. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well. Lisa, as I say, we had a great day in here the day yourself and Eddie called in. It was great to meet you.
We did, and thank you so much for your hospitality.
Not at all. He's a great little fella. And he's one of the most dapper guys I have ever met in my life. Because I'll tell you, they talk about, you know, various people who would be, whether it's Connor, what's his name, the fighter who's always dressed up in the three-piece suit and stuff like that, or indeed Pierce Brosnan, the other James Bond at Cool. And Eddie, I have to tell you, was every bit as dapper the day he came in. We were most impressed with him, and a lovely young lad. Now, just remind listeners again of Eddie's situation, and then we'll share the good news.
Yes, Clem, he was awaiting orthopaedic surgery for his feet. So, waiting years for this surgery, and he's to have five surgeries before the age of 12. This was his second one that he was awaiting. And since he has had his surgery, since we've been on your show. So
now, how long, Eddie's feet, and you sent us in some photographs of the before and after. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Eddie had been waiting a couple of years, had he not?
And he had, he had.
And the implications of that were that his disability would become permanent.
Exactly. And he had open sores on his feet at times. His feet were turning in, like, pretty much on a daily basis. You could see the disfigurement that was occurring.
And was he in a lot of pain?
Because he was in a lot of pain because of his splints. You have to turn his foot straight to get it into the splint, and that was causing him discomfort as well. He was told then that he couldn't go into his H-Cafos, which is a walking frame, and because of the surgery, he couldn't go into that then. So we're never going to see him walk again. Hopefully, fingers crossed now, because he's had his surgery, that decision may be changed.
All right, I'll come back to you in a moment. Amanda Reeves, good morning to you.
Hi, Clem, how are you? Thanks for having us on again.
Not at all. Thank you for coming on. Tell us a little about your story.
So my daughter she was six last week, and she also has spina bifida and hydrocephalus as well. At the moment, we aren't waiting on a surgery or anything, but I know we will be at some point. Spina bifida and hydrocephalus is a lifelong condition and disability. So although, like I said, we're not waiting, currently at the moment, my daughter is mobile. She's a part-time wheelchair user. I know that down the line, we will need surgery at some point.
What age did you say your daughter is, Amanda?
She was six last week.
Six last week. What's her name again?
Alyssa.
Alyssa?
Yeah.
All right, just did I hear you correctly there? Alyssa?
Alyssa, yeah.
Right.
A-L-Y-S-S-A.
Okay, lovely. Just like to know the names of them. And I mean, we were told that there were 69 children on these long waiting lists, but the implications for... I would feel there's more, Amanda.
Yeah, it's the 69 that's on the website, the sbhpag.com. The 69 are just some of the families that have come forward and said, yeah, we'll put our child forward. And it's kind of, it's the more extreme cases that are waiting, the ones that are in pain. We ourselves aren't on the page, but there are lots more families, like hundreds of kids with spina bifida and hydrocephalus in Ireland.
And your daughter, Alyssa, is not considered, let's call it, an urgent case.
We're not urgent at the moment. She isn't waiting on any surgery. At the moment, she doesn't require any surgery.
All right, okay.
But we are 100% behind the campaign, because we know it's only a matter of time before she will need some surgery at some point down the line. It's a lifelong condition. So we will be there at some stage, but
right,
we're just not there yet.
So Lisa, good news for Eddie.
Yes, great news for Eddie. We were very surprised actually when we got the notice that Eddie was having surgery. It came in early January, and within a couple of weeks, we were in the surgery room for a 3.5 hour long surgery for a tendon transfer and an ankle reconstruction.
And how has it gone?
It went very, very well. The surgery was done under Surgeon Conor Green in Kappa Hospital. It went very, very well. And Eddie is on his road to recovery now. He has to be in cast for up to 8 weeks. On Monday last was his first review, and they're delighted with him in the hospital. His wounds are healing well. He has an extra 10 scars to add to the list.
And I looked, when I saw the photograph, I absolutely felt the pain, I'll tell you. Not alone, poor Eddie, when I saw, you know, two what looked like 6-inch scars down the front of his shin, and then other surgical, I'm talking surgical scars now, and more around his feet as well.
Yeah, so it was a 3.5 hour long surgery. But, I mean, I've said before, Surgeon Conor Green is amazing at what he does for our children, and it's a minor enough surgery for him to do. I'd say he could probably do it with his eyes closed. And this is what these children are waiting on, a lot of them, just minor surgeries that can be done very quickly and very easily.
So, Amanda, tell me about this campaign that's going on.
So, basically, it's Poverty and Pain, and it's highlighting the kids that are living with spinal bifida and hypertrophic in Ireland. There's an absolute minimum standard of care for children living with the conditions to be seen by their consultants, like orthopaedics, neurology, urology, ophthalmology, once per year. And this isn't happening, and we're not even getting that for Alyssa. It's like they should be seen every year on the year, but the wait lists are so long, and they don't have the resources to see the kids in a timely manner, and therefore when they do actually get to see them, whatever problems or issues they have has obviously deteriorated. They're in a much worse state than they should be, and then they have to go on to wait lists, and again, that's more waiting, more deterioration, kids in pain, conditions getting worse,
right?
Things like that.
Poverty in Pain certainly does graphically bring it home, and when I looked at Eddie's photographs, it certainly brought it home as well. So Lisa, and I'll be back to you in a minute, Amanda, to get your reaction as well. What about the fact then that €4 million in funding has been announced to cut the waiting list for children like Eddie with spina bifida, like Lisa with the scoliosis, the hydrocephalus and so forth. Children's Hospital Ireland, representing the three children's hospitals in Dublin, Temple Street, Crumlin and Talla, say the capital funding already allocated to develop a fifth operating theatre in Temple Street, MRI machines and additional beds will support an increase in orthopaedic activity in both Crumlin and Temple Street. But will it be sufficient?
Yes, we welcome that decision. I mean, we're not going to turn our nose up at €4 million, but it's not what we're asking for, Clem. Our MDT on an annual basis, it's doing nothing for that. They seem to think that spina bifida is a scoliosis condition, which is not. It's very much a different condition. Spina bifida is a life-limiting condition, where scoliosis can have the surgery, and quite often they don't need any more surgeries for the scoliosis. Spina bifida and hydrocephalus is a life-limiting condition. The surgeries need to be continued. They need to be improved upon. It's for life. I mean, it doesn't go away. Whereas scoliosis is a different issue. And CHI, they're great at amalgamating the two things, but they're very, very different conditions.
Yeah, and by the way, just to outline to people, and I'm just also looking at a report that the Spina Bifida Paediatric Advocacy Group regarding those numbers of children who are waiting between 1 and 4 years for vital orthopaedic surgery to correct this birth defect, which can cause paralysis of the legs and is often accompanied by hydrocephalus, as Amanda just told us with Lisa, yes. Which is water on the brain. Just to explain to listeners, that spina bifida then is a defect that causes damage to the spine and the nervous system and affects around 1 out of every 1,000 children born in this country. Now,
yes, and in some cases these children have scoliosis as well, but it's only a minority of the group.
Just to put it in perspective, by the way, there are currently 649 children in Ireland awaiting orthopaedic surgery for this condition. So, Amanda, I heard you also say no to the 4 million, not to the 4 million, but that it will be enough.
It's not. What the group has asked for, or rather, two orthopaedic consultants went into the Oireachtas in November, and they have come up with a solution and come up with a plan and have costed it at 5.1 million. They have found the space in Kappa Hospital, and all they need is to be given the green light, and they'll ensure that that our kids are looked after, they get the surgeries they need. But the 4 million that the government and CHI, you know, have mentioned, that's 4 million divided between the CHI group. That's 4 million for between Talla, Temple Street and Crumlin, which means each hospital will only get 1.33 million each. And that's not directed towards the Spina Bifida Clinic. They could spend that wherever they please. We need the 5.1 million simply put and directed to
a single kid
would need treatment, and it's for Kappa. Obviously, Kappa doesn't fall under the CHI group. So what they've said isn't a solution. It's not going to fix things. The problems are still going to be there. The kids are still going to be in pain and deteriorate.
And waiting long time for the treatment.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you draw any consolation from the CHI statement representing those hospitals, which says our clinical staff, management and all CHI staff empathise with these families, as we understand that behind every number is a child and the child that needs care. We will continue to update our families and advocacy groups to keep them informed. Does that reassure you, Amanda?
No. Because the CHI groups actually don't have a proper register of all of our kids in Ireland that have spina bifida and hydrocephalus. First, they need to establish a proper register with all of our kids on a list, and then obviously review all the medical charts, go through all the medical charts and see exactly what treatment and medical care all these kids need, and then corroborate things with parents, because some of the parents haven't seen anybody in years and years. So whatever they have last on the medical file is probably not up-to-date information on where the children actually stand.
Okay, and does it reassure you, Lisa?
No, it doesn't. And that 4 million, I mean, it is going to be divided between the hospitals. But also it's extra theatre time in hospitals that are emergency hospitals also. So, I mean, if an emergency comes in, the cancellations are still going to happen.
Right.
We need surgery time in a hospital that is for elective surgeries like Kappa. It's not going to solve the problem. Although, I mean, we're not turning our nose up at it. 4 million is 4 million, but it's not what we're asking for.
Yeah, there's a lot of children out there who'd say, look, I want it now. And as I look at the photographs before and after of Eddie's feet, whereas before and after his feet are crossing at an angle, and afterwards just looking and actually feel the pain of those scars, surgical scars.
Yeah.
But yes, hopefully he's on his way to a dramatic difference, because he's a great, great guy altogether. We wish you both well with the campaign. We're delighted with Eddie's good news. We hope that Elisa will have equal good news at some stage in the future, and that these situations will be resolved.
And Clem,
thank you so much, Clem.
Can I just get in? Councillor Shamie Moore has been a huge help to us with the advocacy group and that as well. So if we could just give him a shout out and say thanks so much for everything. He's been a great support. And obviously to anybody who supported the campaign or shared or watched or tuned in, or even just are telling us that they're supporting us and they hope things get better, we really appreciate everybody's support.
Indeed, and we're happy to help. Lisa
and yourself as well.
Came to us originally. Listen, we wish you, Lisa, and Eddie, and you, Amanda, Lisa Brett in Monaster Evan, and Eddie
Thank
Brett.
Thank you so much for your ongoing support on this, Clem. You've really been wonderful to get our points across. And just to remind people of our website, if they'd like to go and have a look, it's www.sbhpag.com.
S-B-H-P-A-G. Is that P-A-G?
Yeah.
P-A-G. Right.
P-A-G.com.
Right.
So it's the Spina Bifida Hydrocephalus Parents Advocacy Group.
Okay, the advocacy group then, for anybody that wants to look, S-B-H-P-A-G.com. And Amanda Reeves and Alicia in Clane, and indeed Lisa Brett and Eddie Brett in Monaster Evan. You are among our heroes, I'll tell you. Wonderful.
Thanks so much.
And thank you both for joining us this morning. Good morning to you both.
Bye.
All right. Bye. I'm not sure if Eddie and Lisa were in the background there, but indeed, hello to them as well. Okay, keep your messages coming. On the way, we have our sports review of the weekend. Now, good morning, Clem and all the crew. John Smullen here. I live in Great Connell, Newbridge, and I would like to second your listeners' opinion there in that letter you read out earlier. The road from Pfizer to T Junction in Hillsborough in Newbridge is a death trap. At 3:45 p.m. when there is a change of shift in Pfizer, cars pass by my cottage in Great Connell at well over 100 kilometres an hour. Same in the morning from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. with people going to work and doing the school run. The road was a 60 kilometre an hour zone but was changed to an 80 kilometre zone a few weeks back. A lot of elderly people live on this road and they are taking their lives in their hands every time they use the road, says John. And indeed, that's obviously causing issues in regards to that as well. Lots of guesses coming in for the mystery sound issue. I'll tell you, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to take anybody on air today, but I'll go through all the guesses later on and see what we've got in regards to that. What else have I got? Just to let you know, yes, Owen has told me that we're asking Bord na Mona AES for a statement about our next issue. John Colgan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
It's great to talk to you, John Colgan. I have to tell you, local historian and man about town and tidy towns and former councillor.
Wow, that sounds really great.
And former councillor and author and you name it, John Colgan is a legend in Leixlip. What age are you now, John?
Well, next birthday will be on Armistice Day. I'd be 83.
You're only a boogle.
Well, Catton Gwilmshire.
Yeah, go
it's all in the mind, Clem, you know, and keeping going to the gym and that kind of thing.
You're still going to the gym, are you, John?
Well, I haven't been since Christmas, but until Christmas, I went every 2 days.
Good man, John. 83, you're obviously in fair fettle.
Well, in reasonable fettle, I'm only 82 now. I'm not 83 yet.
And that's very important, all right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. The difference between being 82 and 83 is monumental, all right.
Well, when you're 82 and somebody passes you off at 83, it's very offensive, you know.
Okay, John, your bin hasn't been collected for a couple of weeks. What's going on there in Leixlip?
Well, it's I'm with Bord na Mona Recycling. They took over from Kildare County Council in the days when the council emptied their bins, and I'm with them ever since then. And every Tuesday morning, I guess my recycling bin collected, and the next Tuesday it's the waste, rubbish. And they kindly notify me by text message at 5:30 or 5:40 on the day before on the Monday, telling me which bin I have to put out, which is great because I only put bins out when they're full.
Right.
Not when there's only a little bit in them. So the bin went out full, post-Christmas, really. A fortnight ago today, in the evening, for collection the next day. Now, where I leave it is on the street. It's very visible. The trucks have to pass by. It wasn't collected. And I contacted Borden and Mona then immediately that day or that evening. I think it was by email or whatever way it was. And subsequently, I phoned them and they said, yeah, they'd get somebody to deal with it. And then they left a message on my phone, which for some reason or other, people who leave messages from these suppliers, they speak far too fast. They don't speak in the way they normally speak to you on the phone. So I don't actually know what they said. But my bin has been out for the full 2 weeks. It's still there, full to the brim. And I can't understand why, if they alert me by text that they're having a collection the day before, why they can't give me a text number. Indeed, even the same text number could be used by all the bin providers. And they could do it jointly, if you see what I mean. Unfortunately, when a decision was made by the authorities, they allowed any number of bin contractors to go into an area instead of putting the area up for tender and giving it to the one company. So we've a plethora of collectors. But in any case, it's not a bit satisfactory because I have a bin sitting on the street for a fortnight. I took it in last Tuesday when the waste was being collected. I didn't want my carefully sorted recyclable material turfed into a waste truck. So I took it in that night and put it out the next morning. But it really isn't satisfactory because we pay an annual fee as well as a pay per lift. But that's the situation I'm in at the moment.
All and, right. Well, I'll tell you, John, what we're doing is we have asked them for a statement in regards to your issue. So what we'll do is we'll see what they come back with today and then we'll maybe give you a buzz again tomorrow on the programme to get your reaction in relation to it.
Yeah, well, that sounds fine. That's a great job you're doing. We don't have any consumer champions around. besides yourselves, really.
I've been called a lot of things, John, and I'm sure you have in your time as well as a councillor.
Well, I heard what you had to say this morning about the road traffic jams and everything else, and I said to myself, that might as well have been leaks that you're talking about, because we have them flying through the village here every day. We have continuous congestion since Christmas.
Do you know, John, largely, that it's something that I have mentioned on the programme previously, and I noticed it again while I was at home for a couple of days in the Banner. To see my mam, by the way, John, who's 91, so she's...
Brilliant, yes. Give your mam my best wishes and tell her I hope I might see her sometime for a cup of coffee down
there. All right,
okay,
I'll tell her.
I lived in Clare, of course, before I came up to Leixlip.
Oh, you did know. You?
I worked in Shannon for the company called EI Company.
I knew them well, John.
Emerald Isle, it stood for.
Yeah, EI, one of the big factories in Shannon.
Yes,
and
it was the biggest in Ireland at the time, 1,200 employees.
It was. Now, while I was at home, anyway, I'll tell my mam that she can look forward to a date with John Colgan in the next couple of days. She'll be chuffed altogether. I'll say dapper, and ma'am, he's dapper, and he's as bright as a button like yourself, and incredibly intelligent,
my mum
as well.
I'm blushing here.
But while I was at home, John, what struck me, and I'd go out for a run a couple of times a week myself, and when I'm not running, then I go walking. The absolute speed of cars in urban areas is crazy in this country.
It's a shame, really.
If you go abroad, you do not encounter that thing within urban areas. And even in the States, there is not that level of speed. And it's got nothing to do with congestion. People are treating the internal urban areas of our towns, not just in Kildare, across the whole country, like racetracks. And I, for one, would advocate that there should be a strict speed limit within all urban areas, there should be a strict speed limit not exceeding 30 kilometres an hour. everywhere, not just in housing estates.
Nobody to police it. That's part of the issue.
Of course.
You remember Jerry Ward, the county manager in Kildare? He died a few years ago.
Yeah.
He told me the County Managers Association wanted to take over the policing of traffic in Ireland away from the Gardaí, because the Gardaí are not and were not doing it. I mean, I never see a policeman or a speed camera in an urban setting. It's always out on a dual carriage.
Well, now you make a good point.
They're fishing for fines.
Yes, John, and I incline to agree with you on that. We see them on straight stretches of roads. We see them on the motorways and everything else. And they'll say that they only go to places which have had high incidences of accidents. But they would make a fortune if they just parked themselves within urban areas.
I agree with you entirely.
Look, we'll have this debate another day, John. Because
okay.
I have a couple of things to do, and we'll be back to you tomorrow to update this.
Very good, Clem. Take care.
Thanks.
Good morning to you all. The wonderful
John Colgan, who does and has done all his life so much for the community in Leixlip as well. And we'll be back with John tomorrow. Okay, let's get to a couple of other messages then. Actually, I'll do that in a minute because I think we can do this now.
It's all over! It's all over! Finally, mercifully, the referee blows the final whistle. Nathan Campbell, Ireland champions, and the celebrations can begin in earnest.
Ah, yes, and how apt it is that Brian Byrne was the last man with possession as he broke up the field. But again, an absolutely fantastic ending to the game. They had to do it the hard way, but they are now a team that wins these type of games. We saw it in the county final against Selbridge, and we see it in the biggest of stages here in the All-Ireland final.
That the voice of former Kildare hurling goalkeeper Paul Darmody, our match analyst on Saturday evening's All-Ireland final, our commentator Ger McNally. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning, Clem.
What a fantastic achievement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely amazing. Yeah, the first Kildare hurling side to win an All-Ireland title and only the second adult side to win one since, adult men's one anyway, to win one since the two Mulhouse footballers back in 2014. It was February 2014. So it's something that doesn't happen very often, and it's something that should be absolutely cherished by every GAA fan in the county, especially people around Naas. They should be so, so proud of what that team has achieved. We always kind of thought they had the potential to do something special, but us sitting up in the stands and thinking that these sort of things might be possible is a lot different to the lads who are putting in the commitment on the pitch and doing the right things off the field as well in between games and during the weeks. And they got the reward on Saturday in some style. It was a really tough last 10 or 15 minutes. There was a lot of pressure being put on them, but they were able to just repel just about what Kilmiley were throwing at them to get over the line. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful achievement.
Because they had been in control, you're listening to yourself and the commentary by Paul Darmody from Croke Park on Saturday evening. Naas were always looking good, but then it all seemed to circle the wagons in the last couple of minutes. And I'm not going to say they were lucky, but certainly Kilmiley did have chances late in that game to at least level it.
Yeah, myself and Paul just got in early to watch the second half of the junior game. There was the curtain raiser beforehand, and we were just kind of laughing and joking, saying you never win an All-Ireland title easy, because that was a really close game. And we thought we were maybe going to be looked foolish with that statement when Naas were so in control at half-time and into the early part of the second half. But Kilmiley absolutely threw everything at Naas in the closing stages. They got a goal back at a really important time, and that gave them some belief. And the longer the game was going on, the worse the weather was getting. It was absolutely pouring down rain, and I certainly wouldn't say that Naas were lucky. You're right to say that Kilmiley had chances, absolutely, and Kilmiley did put a huge amount of pressure. But I have to say, I think Naas, they stood up to it. They were able to be really strong defensively. They brought on a couple of players from the sideline, and bodies were thrown into block shots, and some of the kind of physical battles that went on in around the 20-metre line when the ball was on the ground and the rucks developed. Naas were able to just about come out on top of that, and in the end, although it was a really nail-biting finish to it, I think definitely that Naas were deserving winners of the game.
All right, let's hear indeed from the man who I saw on Twitter last night. I think it was three cups at least, if not more, that he was holding, having been a member, of course, of the Naas football side that lost the Leinster final only a couple of weeks ago. Dual player Brian Byrne, who's the captain of the Naas Hurlers. Two county titles this year. He's also captained the Kildare Hurlers to two Christy Ring Cups as well, I believe. And now he's an All-Ireland winning captain.
We knew Kilmaily are tough, like they're a dogged old team, and we kind of expected them to come back into in the fourth quarter. Like, they brought Corsi Rovers to extra time as well, and they're a real fourth quarter team. They were nip and tuck with Banagher in the All-Ireland semi-final as well, and they came good in the fourth quarter, and that's when they pushed on to win by six. So we kind of knew that was coming, but as the rain started getting heavier and heavier, it becomes a lot harder to get scores, and scores really matter. So we were able to hang on, we got a free to push it back out to four, and then they got the goal, and then I think we got one more score to make it plus two in the end. But there's just that, when plus one, plus two or plus three is always that dangerous, that skidding ball can go somewhere into the back of the net. But our backs held strong and Galley held strong once again.
What an incredible player on the hurling and football front, Naas captain Brian Byrne. Here's the Naas manager, a man who was previously, this was his second team that he managed to an All-Ireland title, Tom O'Lally.
We needed to kind of provide answers in. It's not summer hurling, as you said, so it was never going to be a 25, 26, 28 point game. It was going to be 15, 18, 19 points, and I think we got there through persevering as much as possible, and I think the panel trusted themselves. They, you know, backed each other and kind of went for it in the end, and thankfully everything went right.
He's done some job with them. I mean, it included a win against his home club, Glenmore of Kilkenny, in the quarter final. That was Gerard. They then beat Glenbrinn Islegate of Wexford in the semi final, was it? Or was that the final?
That was the Leinster final, yeah.
The Leinster final. Yeah, and then they beat Tureen of Mayo in the All-Ireland semi final. It's some achievement for him, isn't it? Previously, was it Mount Leinster Rangers of Carlow he managed?
Yeah, that's right. 10 years ago, yeah, that he led Mount Leinster Rangers to the same All-Ireland title. And he was actually very, very emotional on Saturday evening. There was tears coming out of his eyes when he was speaking to us, and he had to kind of regather himself on a couple of occasions. So it obviously meant a huge, huge amount to him. And as I said, these aren't won easily. I mean, there was a lot of planning that was put into this, and a lot of kind of hard nights graft as well. But I suppose the ups and downs of sport, because himself and Christy Keeney, who was his number two there with Nathan, also his number two with the Carlow side, they were up in Ballycran to play down in the opening round of the league then on Sunday afternoon. And less than 24 hours after being crowned the All-Ireland champion, Tom O'Lally was sent off for remonstrating with the referee with 10 minutes to go in a fiery encounter then, and Carlow actually lost that game to a last-gasp goal. So the highs of what happened with Naas were kind of flipped on its head, but I'm sure that when he has a bit of time to reflect on things during this week, he will cherish that victory for Naas, as all involved will, I'm sure, for a long, long time.
Now, we have extended interviews with Brian Byrne, with Tom O'Lally, and with all the others that you're hearing on this, which is just a shorter review of the weekend. Kildare scoreboard this evening from around 25 past 6 to 7 o'clock. We'll have the full interviews across all four games that we're covering, and our congratulations to Naas. What an incredible season they've had, and really it's good for Kildare hurling, it's good for Kildare football, and a great, great boost for the county. So kudos all round to everybody. They got a great welcome home on Saturday night as well, with the roads being lined as they were paraded from the town out to the clubhouse. But that wasn't the end of it for Naas, because earlier in the day, Naas CBS pulled off their third Leinster College Senior Football A title, Ger. This time in an All Kildare final, they edged out Maynooth second level schools by just a single point.
Yeah, a fantastic victory, and I suppose it just establishes Naas CBS position now within Leinster as a stronghold in terms of schools GAA, because as you said, it's the third win in four competitions. They've been in four finals in a row, and despite the turnover of players that's involved, they keep producing players, and they have such strength and depth. They certainly were given a good game by Maynooth. Maynooth got an early goal and then a last gasp goal, but in between that, I think Naas CBS showed that they were the better side and just had a better spread of scores, better kind of quality of shot execution on a very windy day that probably didn't help either side. But in the end, yeah, Naas CBS were fully deserving of that victory, and we could yet see another Naas side back in Croke Park if they can come through an All-Ireland semi-final and get to the final now of the Hogan Cup. And you wouldn't rule that out, because it's a hugely talented side with a lot of experience of county minor football as well in that panel, so they will fancy their chances then moving into the All-Ireland series.
And the manager is Padraig Cribben.
They're young lads, and look, as I said about these young lads, they actually haven't won anything underage. Between Raheem's and Naas, just this group of players, none of them had actually won anything, so look, they're going to be nervous, but got over the line. And that's what I always keep telling them all week. I said, you've never won anything, you have to go out and you have to go a place you've never gone before now and really dig this out, because we knew what Minute would bring.
And indeed, what a cracking, thrilling game that was. Full interview with Páirí Cribben this evening on Scoreboard from 6:25. Off to Donegal then, Ger. You should be on the board of Bord Fáilte, Ger. You're touring the country. And really the difference in this game between Kildare and Donegal yesterday was the concession of two goals, in particular one just on the cusp of half-time.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Yeah, we're travelling the length and breadth of the country, and we travelled through every sort of weather on the way up as well. And when we got up to Donegal and Ballybuffet, it was very, very windy. The pitch actually had to have a pitch inspection earlier in the morning, and then heavier rain again fell after that inspection by all accounts. And by the time we got there, it was just a huge blustery wind that made football very, very difficult. But yeah, that's no excuse for Kildare, because ultimately it's the concession of those two soft goals and then the failure to take opportunities in the second half when they had the wind at the back and they had a bit of pressure on, they kicked too many wides. But that goal just before half time was absolutely criminal to concede, because it was from a Kildare kick out. They were 3 points down in first half injury time, and that would have been a good return having played into a strong wind. But a soft goal then came from that kick out, and suddenly then it was a 6 point gap at the half time break, and left Kildare a lot to do. But having said that, they never stopped trying. The effort was certainly there, and they did have a real spell at the 10 or 15 minutes when Donegal just could not get out of their own half. But Kildare just couldn't get the scores really on the scoreboard.
All right.
To close that gap.
Let's hear what Glenn Ryan had to say.
I would be disappointed. Maybe the sense that kind of knew second goal was going to have an impact maybe on the result. I don't think we deserve to be 6 points down at half time. And I would say in the second half, we probably gave ourselves enough opportunities to be closer. Maybe we just didn't go after it hard enough, you know.
Full interview with Glenn this evening between 6:25 and 7 o'clock. Before we move to the Kildare Hurlers, Chair, just one word on that game between Carlow and Down that you talked about. I just see a cut Shannon O'Christian has sent us from a website. I'm not sure what website it is. Has a photograph which, with the headline under it, Down Hurlers were called Prods and Brits during the Carlow League game clash, the manager claims. Did you hear anything about that since?
Yeah, no, we're just trying to investigate a little bit more this morning. But yeah, obviously the manager there, Down, has made some allegations on Twitter last night and then on RTE this morning. To be honest, they're very, very serious allegations to be making against any team, and if they were substantiated, they should be going through the proper channels, I would say, rather than putting tweets out on Twitter. Those reports should be made and pinpoint exactly what was said and who said it, rather than kind of put out general tweets. But we'll investigate further, and anybody around Carlow can check out the Nationalist tomorrow.
All right, indeed. Thanks very much, Ger. You're a marvel of nature, I have to say, Ger, in terms of the work you did over the weekend in those three games. St. Conleth Park on Saturday at 12, Croke Park on Saturday at 5, and then McCool Park Ballybuffet yesterday. I know it was very late when you got home, and I wonder, was it you at 7 o'clock this evening that pinged my alarm in terms of returning to KFM in regards to that? But well done, Ger. Super job as usual, and thank you for that. We'll let Ger back to his newspaper duties on that front. And Seamus Dillon, finally, the Kildare Hurlers, Seamus, began their league campaign yesterday, but no joy for them against Meath.
No, good morning, Clem. No, losing out on a scoreline of 18 points to 15. I suppose the main problem that Kildare encountered throughout that is after 16 minutes, it was 5 points each. Kildare led 3 points to one early in the first half, and were 5 points to four up after 14 minutes before Jack Regan, who caused all the problems for Kildare yesterday. He contributed 13 points for Meath from play and from freeze. But Kildare went 19 minutes in that opening half without a score and trailed by 8 points at half time, and that quickly went to nine in the first minute of the second half. And from there to the end, in fairness to Kildare, they conceded 4 points from two the Meath lads, but they had closed it down to within 2 points, 16 points to 14 after 66 minutes. And as David Hersey said after the game, they always knew that they would have needed a goal to break that Meath resistance in the back line.
All right, well, let's hear from David Hersey then.
Bitterly disappointed. We left ourselves with a lot to do kind of from about the last 25 minutes. We let them open up a 9 point gap, and then we tried to crawl our way back into it. But we knew coming into the game, I'd say we probably needed two goals to win this game. We knew against Meath in any of their matches there, they generally keep trying to shoot the lights out there points wise points, and we needed that couple of goals there to close the gap. And we just didn't find them today, unfortunately.
And they have an even tougher task, if I might put it that way, because they're away to Kerry next Sunday.
Kerry and Tralee, but probably one positive coming out, and maybe hear it later on in the interview, is that the Naas players will make themselves available from Wednesday night onwards. So in fairness to them, they've showed a great enthusiasm to get back involved, and David is very happy with that. He put no pressure on them, but they you know, indicated to him that they would be back this week. So whatever amount of them that he will be able to use next weekend, but they certainly will be back to the panel. But an intriguing battle to go to Tralee.
Thanks indeed, Seamus Dillon. That's astonishing good stuff by the Naas hurlers. You know, you imagine they'd want to break, but to make themselves available again, that's wonderful. Could we thank our sponsors of our coverage over the weekend as well? Taff Sand and Gravel. They're in Black Trench in Naas for the sponsorship of the college's final on Saturday. Then Joe Mallon Motors, Renault and Main Dacia dealers for Kildare and Laois. They were the sponsors of our All-Ireland hurling final in Croke Park. And of course, Hanlon's Concrete, sponsors of our Kildare football and hurling GAA throughout the season as well. Thanks to all of them. And our commentary teams throughout the weekend. Ger McNally in particular for all those games. Peter McConnon, Paul Darmody and Seamus Dillon.